You are listening to Junctions and Sidetracks, the story behind the creation of Empire Builder, a musical about a time-traveling train, conversations about family, history, race, and forgiveness. Music by George Maurer, libretto by Anne Bertram. Episode 10, The Encounter.
Welcome back. This is Empire Builder librettist Anne Bertram. In the last episode of Junctions and Sidetracks, composer George Maurer and I talked with anthropology professor Pei Lin Yu. She gave us some insights about the quandary faced by our character Dr. Holder, a sociologist who has to choose whether to abandon her academic career for a more lucrative job in industry. Now, in this episode, we've arrived at the last scene of Act One. So we've just had the conversation between Dr. Holder and Jimmy about Dr. Holder's grandfather's Elgin, railroad watch that's been handed down in her family. And she's on her way west, not only to consult with her sister about what she should do with her job decision, but to hand on the watch to her nephew because she now feels unworthy of it.
Why does she feel unworthy of it?
She feels unworthy of it because she's inclining toward giving up her academic job, which she feels is the job that is most likely to give her an opportunity to right some wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
She's really inclined toward leaving it
mm-hmm.
and going to her friend's marketing firm and making some money.
Okay.
She's got some guilt around that. So the conductor has called out, next stop, 1944. And now all three of our characters, Sky and Dr. Holder and Jimmy, can all hear the conductor make this announcement that the next stop is the year 1944. And Sky has sort of had enough of this fanciful train making its stops in the past. He wants some explanations about what's going on here.
Like I said, a very rare thing.
Keep moving on. Don't look back.
The lights, sound quality, and atmosphere change yet again. Sky, Jimmy, and Dr. Holder are all aware of it.
Next stop, 1944!
What in the world?
It's this train. It's special. You could say it's a special train. Like anyone gets that joke. Shut up, Jim. I'm shutting up now.
I get it.
Cool.
It's not much of a joke, but I get it.
Connect here for a gleam of light in the darkness and an encounter with Grandpa.
Sky pulls the emergency cord to stop the train.
Ladies and gentlemen, the westbound Empire Builder has come to an unscheduled stop in an unknown location. Estimated time of departure is unknown. Will the passenger who pulled the cord please meet me out in front by the engine? Thank you.
You want backup?
No. I'm going to get some answers.
Sky exits the train car into an all-occluding hissing cloud of steam. It gradually clears, revealing the conductor.
Are you the party who pulled the cord, sir?
Yes.
What's the trouble?
Explain these stops to me. 1889, 1919, 1944.
It's all right here in the timetable. 1944, 1966, 1976.
No. Oh no, absolutely not. If that's where we're headed, I'm getting off right here.
It's up to you, sir, of course. But you should be aware, other forms of transit don't often come out this way. If you get off here, plan to stay a good long while.
Those are my choices. Nowhere North Dakota or 1944 and 1966.
And 1976.
Why?
It's the only way forward.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I'm supposed to learn the true meaning of Christmas. Is that the idea?
It's August, sir.
I'm supposed to see generations of dispossession. I'm supposed to understand that grandfather had all of that weighing down on him, and therefore he couldn't help giving me up. This may come to you as a shock, but I know all that. I spent all day up to my eyebrows in the wholesale theft of land that made America, okay? None of this is news to me, and none of it excuses what he did. No, I maintain that we all have choices, no matter how hard we're pressed. Everyone's accountable. You know, there's no free pass because you did your best. I know there's entrenched injustice and pain you cannot run. But if you really give a damn, you buckle down. No, you do what has to be done. Now, sooner or later, one way or the other, sooner or later we all face the facts. Now, don't shoot the messenger. Now, don't blame your mother. Sooner or later, you're judged by your acts.
Well, sir, judgment isn't really my department. For that matter, neither is Christmas. But if I may offer an observation, if there is nothing new for you at any of our stops, then surely there's nothing for you to be afraid of.
Afraid of?
You pulled the emergency cord, sir. In my experience, that usually correlates with fear of some kind.
Now, I'm not afraid of any of your freakish stops. I just don't like them.
1944 is next. When you're ready, just pull the cord.
There's another cloud of steam.
With each of these episodes, we've talked to different subject matter experts and then discussed how their perspectives and their advice may lead us to make changes in our musical empire builder. Well, now, like Sky and his fellow passengers, we come to a temporary halt. So we're taking a minute to reflect on how the radio series as a whole has changed our ideas.
We wanted our conversation with the experts to give you some more depth and detail about the subjects we bring up in Empire Builder. We also wanted our experts to help us figure out where our own blind spots are.
And they did. Though this wasn't one of the goals we talked about at the start, this radio series also gave us a chance to take the time to take a good close look at the musical. The last draft was from 2014, so we ourselves have new perspectives on it now just because 4 years have passed and we've learned things in that time.
Keep on thinking about this. This is like Wizard of Oz meets It's a Wonderful Life.
Meets a Christmas Carol.
Meets a Christmas Carol. Is there anybody named, is the conductor's name Clarence? I'm curious.
Or Marley. Yeah,
Clarence Marley.
Clarence Marley.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll be back in the fall with Act Two, a similar exposition over the course of 10 episodes or so, probably in October, late October. which we'll be able to hear what happens in the second half of Empire Builder. But for the time being, coming up in our last two episodes, our last hour of Junctions and Sidetracks, since we've been breaking this all up apart and throwing things in between each of these scenes, we're now going to perform or have played for our listening audience all of Act One and just listening to it straight through from beginning to end as performed by Nautilus Music Theater in 2014.
I believe that's correct, yes.
At Walker Community Church, with one microphone, a band, and a cast of singer-actors.
There you go.
Yeah, so we'll be listening to that coming up shortly here. What do you feel you learned from this process of breaking apart the musical by scenes, finding experts in certain fields to react to what we had created, adjusting as necessary, but all the other things, there's so many other things that we did to kind of make this an interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things I was going over in my mind what I'd want to talk about in this section of the conversation, things that at the end of the process now, what do I remember most, what sticks with me the most loudly. I remember Ben's remark that musical theater is not the place for naturalistic storytelling, which is, I think, good to keep in front of me at all times, because I think that's sort of my default mode, is naturalistic storytelling. And to
define or expand on naturalistic storytelling for those of
naturalistic
us that
storytelling. So,
are so naturalistic.
A play where you would, going down into very specific details about each character, people behaving the way, trying to make it seem as though the people you're watching are behaving in ways that people that you meet outside the theater might behave. Mm-hmm. Well, in music theater, they don't, because they're bursting into song, and that does not happen in your life. So given that we are living in music theater, this is a heightened world. This is a intensified world. Mm-hmm. How do you make things a little bit bigger? How do you make the choices a little bit starker? How do you make the people a little bit bolder, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
That's advice I'm trying to keep in front of me as I think about changes I might like to make.
Mm.
You know, when we were at Train Day, one of the things that you could get at the booksellers was the 1950 schedule of you know, trains coming out of New York City or trains going into Kansas City. And there's part of me that really wants to know, what was the schedule for that it's, particular line in 1944?
It's hard not to geek out and be like a Train Day zombie.
Look, I know this. Let me share this with you.
Yeah.
That's not important. for this story, for this mode, right?
Yeah.
So that's something that comes back to me. Our discussion with David Goldstein and his advice about Jimmy being a little too forthright in diving into conversations about, diving into remarks about race and inequity. That is as a really useful note about how we learn about Jimmy. Let's take him a little more gradually, right? Let's ramp him up a little more, a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
To get to his
Some bridging conversation, or
some more tentative remarks. Mm. I was re-listening to the conversation with Palin just a couple of evenings ago, and here's a thought that dawned on me after she talks about how for Dr. Holder and for Sky, family history and history book history are really closely connected. Mm. You can't look at history books and say that has nothing to do with me and my family. It has everything to do with them. I wonder if Jimmy doesn't know his grandparents.
Mm.
And that's one. Now I'm going to go off on a little sidetrack here. One piece of feedback I remember getting from the workshop was somebody feeling kind of downcast on Jimmy's behalf because Jimmy doesn't get to visit any ancestors on the train.
That's right.
And sort of at first, my thinking about that is, well, we're familiar with middle-class white folks visiting the past. Like, we kind of know what that looks like. There are other plays that talk about that. I don't think that was where we wanted to focus, what was happening in this play. But if he is disconnected from his own family, part of the reason he doesn't get to visit the past is because he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't handed on to him. Mm. So that there's a break in his knowledge that would kind of justify the way that it plays out.
That reminds me of a thought I had before I was so rudely interrupted biking by your phone call saying I was late for this session. I was just actually thinking about the phrase, at what cost? At what cost? At what cost? And I'm wondering if we're looking, because I think we discussed earlier something about Jimmy having his shift and his change, and maybe we haven't caught that all in song, or we revisit a reprise of Train Time to address that.
Yes.
But what if there's a song, and I don't know if it's connected to at what cost does not knowing your history bring you not to a place where you can have empathy, or at what cost all the other things that we've seen in this act one so far that address that issue on so many different levels and across time. Just a thought.
Yeah.
I'm just a composer. I'm not prescribing anything.
Ha ha. I mean, this is...
There it is, the creative process.
There it is. Well, and it's... You're present in the book too, right?
Yes.
You are.
Yes,
yeah. Well, we had thought about maybe the idea of a reprise of Equality or Leave It Alone, so a bracket of that Dr. Holder and Jimmy encounter right before Train Time at the end.
And that kind of does fit in with equality. I mean, equal and cost and so on. So maybe there's a way to have some sort of thread.
Bring that idea back.
It brings that idea back. A bridge of some sort between those two songs, which it kind of abruptly went from one to the other.
Yeah.
Maybe those two songs, the reprises of them, if we're bringing them back, now have a bridge that connects them.
I like it, yeah.
Rather than an abruptness.
Yeah.
A railroad bridge.
Railroad bridge.
Yes.
You're listening to Junctions and Sidetracks, conversations about Empire Builder, a new musical about a time-traveling train.
There's a statue of James J. Hill outside the Amtrak station in Havre, Montana.
Hmm.
And I first saw that statue when I had first driven out to Jack Gladstone's cabin, and it was January of 2012. I was going out there for like a week and a half as a guest of his in his cabin with this great view overlooking the frozen St. Mary's Lake. He gave me snowshoes. I was looking westward towards Glacier National Park, and I started writing Train Time in his cabin. Mm-hmm. I had my keyboard with. I drove all the way out there. And on my way out, I saw this huge steam locomotive, this great northern iron horse outside the Amtrak station in Hover. And I had, of course, to stop and do a selfie by it, you know, in the winter. And I walked around the building, and on the other side of the building was a statue of James J. Hill, covered with snow, standing in the middle of a water fountain that they have there, which, of course, was shut off in the winter. But there was a sign there on the outside of the water fountain that basically said, "Please do not vandalize the statue." And I looked, and there was like chicken wire up now around the statue, and I was looking for security cameras, and I realized that people have been vandalizing James J. Hill's statue, and I kind of went, I wonder why, because some people don't forget the past, and some people haven't forgiven our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers and so on, or other people's great-grandfathers. But I found it very interesting, but also kind of very telling, that the figures of the dominant culture, you know, are not often looked upon as deserving of being there by other cultures that are sharing the same space. Yeah. So all this, just this legacy, if you will, we hear at Train Day talking about everything he built and putting down the money for a third of the St. Paul Cathedral. And I mean, there's been philanthropic things that have been done over the years, you know, and that money came from the wealth that had been generated by the ability to change those lands, to
commandeer those lands.
Commandeer those lands, to push through that industry, to bring farmers in, it changed everything. But there was a cost, and that's what we are saying, what we are laying before our audience here, is just to not forget or to acknowledge where history books might not mention that, most likely don't mention that, probably don't mention that to a certain extent, and to show nuances on the lauds that are given.
Let's remember both things.
Let's remember both things. Yeah. All the things.
All the things.
You know? Yeah.
The benefits and the costs.
Yeah.
So what are you taking away? What have you learned?
Well, one thing that I've learned is a lot of fun things about putting together a radio project. I've never done this before. And so I wanted this radio series to be textured to have things like underscoring much of what I was able to provide, or picking songs that help bridge scenes, use a foley of sorts. The horses clapping in the first episode that are supposed to represent my grandfather, who was a mounted police officer in Chicago during the Al Capone days. I simply went out and recorded horses clapping by on Nicollet Island in front of my house.
Nice.
And said, "There you go. I've got horse clubs now." Finding songs and realizing intuitively that this was also theater, that it wasn't just a podcast and two people sitting in a room talking and that's it. Creating textured and layered sort of things happening behind conversations that helped bring those conversations to life a little bit more.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about that and from just mixing down these episodes. I have a ton of respect, even more so, for people who work in public radio and create radio, this type of radio, that do it on a full-time basis. How much time goes into it, how much detail, how much thinking. I would work on these episodes sometimes 6, 7, 8 hours a day, and then mix it down real quick and drop it into my iPhone, and then get on my bicycle and ride for an hour and listen to the episode while I was writing, and nothing else distracted me other than just listening with my ears. And I caught some of my little mistakes, and some of them I had my best aha moments bicycling, which was a great exercise for me to employ with putting some distance in the creative process between being so nose into a computer and ears forward on something. So I'm hoping that we get some interesting comments and some good comments from people from our Facebook page, Junctions and Sidetracks, Facebook.com/groups/junctionsandsidetracks.
And is and spelled out?
At Junctions and, yep, A-N-D. Or they can email us at empirebuilder1889@gmail.com. 1889 was the year that the Great Northern Railroad was incorporated.
Ah.
So, yeah. And I think I'd like to hearken back to our very first conversation in episode one, where we had Ben Krywatz, who is artistic director of Nautilus Music Theater in Lower Town, St. Paul. And he was correct when he said, and I'll probably have his voice edited in here saying, your approach to this is generous. And it certainly was. It certainly took up a ton more time.
A little bit of time travel here. We go back to something that was said by Ben Krywatz of Nautilus Music Theater back in Junctions and Sidetracks, episode one.
I keep coming back to is what's the spine of the story and what and how are these other kind of really interesting, intriguing, and mysterious elements helping to tell that story. You know, that's what moves it from an anecdote into a story. You know, that there's a reason to tell this story. Otherwise, it's like, oh yeah, so this guy went back to the reservation and visited his grandfather when he was dying. That's, you know, I mean, to paraphrase E.M. Forster, an anecdote is the queen died and the king died. A story is the queen died and the king died of a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
There's a resonance there. Like now that's something that makes me start thinking about who this king was and who this queen was and what their relationship was and you know, as opposed to something that happened. An anecdote is something that happened. A story is told because there's a larger reason to tell the story other than just to engage or to entertain or to pass the time.
I think we've done things to give people an opportunity for emotional reaction.
Yes, and I think as long as we need to continue to make that our goal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And resist the great power of geeking out,
mm-hmm.
And the anecdote is three strangers get onto a train and talk to each other. The story is three strangers get on a train and are able to give each other what they need, right, to face the decisions they have to face.
Mm-hmm. So they do more than just tolerate each other. They're not forced to, but they make the choice of listening, and the train sort of helps them with that.
Yeah. And it may not be that the way that they give help is by being helpful. The way that they give help may be inadvertent. It may be mm-hmm. a byproduct of what they're trying to do. But corny way to look at it, we're all on the same train now, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need each other to get where we're going to go.
Next station stop.
Next station stop.
Act 2.
Take me home.
All aboard.
Please take me home. I'm tired of engaging with ignorance. Constantly defending my work and my existence. Please take me home. Oh, Grandma, who washed the tablecloths? Set the brakes. Daddy, who ran the engine? Won't you tell me? Won't you tell me? What was it you dreamed of? What was it you worked for? What was it you wanted?
This is Anne again. Something I want to say about the Junctions and Sidetracks radio series as a whole, something I've been noticing is that tagline we use. Conversations about family, history, race, and forgiveness. We repeat that word forgiveness a lot, and the more I hear it, the more uncomfortable it makes me. I've been struggling with what I want to say about that. I'm a white person writing about racial injustice in the past and how it persists in the present. I'm not in a position to say that that injustice should be forgiven. I don't know that it's forgivable, given that it continues, but I know that it may look like that's what I'm saying. I have to trust that Empire Builder, either in the version you're about to hear or in future versions, will say what we mean it to say. Thinking about forgiveness also takes me back to the story about George's dream, the dream that was part of the inspiration for Empire Builder. He dreamed he was on a train that made stops in the past, and at the end of the line, he met his grandfather, a mounted policeman in Chicago. When he talked about that dream earlier in the series, he raised the question, what would happen if we really could travel across that void and meet our ancestors? What would we say to them? When I think about my own ancestors, I feel like Dr. Holder in Empire Builder. I look back on how hard they worked and how many obstacles they had to overcome, and I feel like I don't measure up. For instance, there's my maternal grandmother. She and her 6 brothers and sisters grew up picking cotton in Oklahoma. When she was growing up, there was an entrance exam to get into high school, and it cost a quarter. Her mother, who in addition to farming cotton was barely making ends meet by reconditioning mattresses and selling Bibles door to door, her mother didn't want to give her the quarter. It's a waste of money. She won't pass the test. Her grandmother gave her the quarter and said, it's not a waste of money. Even if she doesn't pass, it's good practice. Grandma passed the test. Her uncle was a doctor and offered to help pay for her education after high school. He told her that as a woman, she had 3 options. You can go into the nursing profession, the teaching profession, or the oldest profession. She chose the nursing profession. She worked for Western Electric in Chicago and used to commute on the L train. Every ride on the L, she knew some jerk was going to pinch her on the backside. And they always acted like they were doing you a favor, she said. She was determined that her daughter and granddaughters were going to have it easier than she did, and she made it happen. So if I think about what it would be like to meet her again now, part of me feels like I should ask for her forgiveness. I'm sorry, Grandma. I'm sorry I'm not as tough as you. I'm sorry I took some of the advantages you gave us for granted. On the other hand, maybe I'm in a position to offer some forgiveness, too. Hey, Grandma, this rapacious feeling that no matter what I do, I'm not doing enough. I think I got that from you. It's okay, though. We're cool. I guess that's the kind of forgiveness that I hope Empire Builder brings to mind. Forgiveness we can ask for and offer to our own ancestors. The forgiveness Sky may or may not be able to extend to Grandfather.
You've been listening to Junctions and Sidetracks, the story behind the creation of Empire Builder, a musical about a time-traveling train. Junctions and Sidetracks is an original radio series conceptualized by George Maurer and Ann Bertram and created by George Maurer for KBEM-FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. Sound designed and edited by George Maurer. All music, unless otherwise noted, composed and performed by George Maurer and friends. You can email us at empirebuilder1889@gmail.com. That's empirebuilder1889, one word, @gmail.com. Studio mix is by Justice Sanchez. The executive producer is Michelle Jansen. Junctions and Sidetracks is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund.